swish, and certainly not the thundering call of a slua on the hunt. I sat down on the cold stone floor, placing my light carefully on my lap, and I listened. To my mind, to my heart, call it what you will. I listened to Tristan's emotions and tried to understand what he intended. Desperation. He had not, as I thought he would, instantly rounded up guards to track me down. The sharp pain I had felt under my ribs returned, and I drew my knees up to my chest to try to ward it off. Tristan wasn't coming. Disappointment chased away hope, and I forced myself to acknowledge the fact that I had hoped he would come after me. False hopes. Why shouldn't he abandon me to the labyrinth? Whether I escaped or died trying, the result was the same. He would be free of me, the repulsive human. He'd be free to be with Anais, able to claim that his aunt's prophecy was nothing but ramblings and not worth taking seriously. Fear? That was there too. But of course it would be. His father would be angry that Tristan had allowed me to escape, unbound by the oaths that kept Trolla secret from the outside world. But even the king's anger would fade when they realized there would be no retribution from me. I just wanted to forget ever being here. I wanted to leave and let time wipe away the memory of Trolis and its people, and most of all, of Tristan. Misery. This was nothing new. I don't care, I whispered. I refuse to care any longer. Sticking the leather handle of my light between my teeth, I got down on my belly and crawled into the tunnel.
Chapter 24. Tristan. How? Mark demanded. It's locked, and I have the only key. She can pick locks, I said, remembering our encounter in the corridor the night we were bonded. We need to go after her. Mark turned to run, but I grabbed his arm, yanking him back. That had been my first instinct, too. But was it the correct one? Wait. Mark swore. What do you mean, wait? If we go now, we'll catch her before anyone notices she's gone. His eyes widened as he realized what I was thinking. You can't seriously be considering letting her make the attempt. She's unarmed and wearing a bloody gown and heels. She'll fall and break her neck. I flinched, but kept my voice steady. She's wearing boots, and she isn't a silly parlor maid. She's strong and clever. She can do this. Mark shoved me against a wall. Have you lost your bloody mind? The labyrinth is deadly, even for one of us, and she's just a girl. No more deadly than it will be for her here. I closed my eyes and listened. Cecile's fear making my hands grow cold. Every inch of me yearned to go after her, to bring her back, keep her safe, and yet... This is her chance, Mark. Her one chance to escape Trolis and to escape me. If I stop her, she'll only hate me for it. Are you sure? I wasn't sure. Indecision racked me to the core, but there were no good options. If I interfered with her escape, not only would she hate me for it, I was certain Angoulême would make an attempt on her life. If I let her continue into the labyrinth, I risked her being killed by any number of things. But if she escaped, she'd be safe. Grinding my teeth, I forced myself to sit down on the ground and remain still. There was no good choice, because no matter the outcome, one thing was certain. I was going to lose her.
Chapter 25. Cecile. With no fear of imminent pursuit, I was able to move at a slower and safer pace. The stones scraped my hands, and I felt bruises rising on my knees, but still I pressed forward. Though Tristan had not raised the alarm at my absence, it was inevitable Elise or Zoe would notice, and I had a long way to travel. The trolls could still catch me if I wasn't careful. Reaching an intersection of rock, I scrambled my way up to consult the list of markers. Water ran across the etchings, and many were nearly washed away, but the one I had been following remained clear enough. Sitting on my heels, I gripped my light tightly and slid down the wet rock, landing with a splash in a pool of water that came nearly to my waist. This was new. Cursing, I bent my head beneath the low ceiling and waded forward. The water grew deeper until it brushed my chin. I had never considered not being able to maintain my route. I was a fool for it. Mark had told me the labyrinth was always changing. I swam forward, my light unaffected by immersion in the water, and it was then I saw the source of the flooded passage. The way ahead was filled with rock. Cave-in. My heart skipped a beat, and I splashed backwards, eyes on the stone above me, which seemed deceptively solid. My way was blocked, and I would need to find another. Wading back, I climbed onto the boulder and weighed up my options. There were two. Turn back, or go upwards, and to the right. I refused to consider the first. I had come too far for that. But next to the markers pointing to the right were ominous, curved lines. Slua. Even though the water was icy, I felt hot. I kept imagining the white bulk of the slua rearing up in front of me, its poisonous stinger shooting out like a whip. My beam of light trembled as I pointed it into the passageway. I closed my eyes and listened. Silence. And fear, both Tristan's and mine. His had grown considerably, and that could only mean my absence had been noted and his father's wrath was at hand. The trolls would be after me now, if they weren't already. I had to hurry. The passage to the right soon opened up into a wider space. It was easier for me to pass through, but it also meant more room for even the largest of slua. I could smell them. I stepped softly and tried to keep the rasping of my breath to a minimum. They hunted by sound. It was the sound of our shouting that had lured the slua to Luke and me before. If I kept silent, I might pass unnoticed. From the stench, it seemed likely that at least one of them had fed recently, and maybe it wouldn't be hungry enough to seek me out. I pressed my hand against the damp wall to steady myself against the slippery drop ahead. Gripping the handle of my light, I navigated the sharp rocks, clinging to them with my free hand as I eased my way down. I took a step forward, and my heel slipped, sending me crashing down hard on my bottom. "Don't scream, don't scream!" My voice was a harsh whisper as I fought to stop my slide forward. But the surface was sheer and my clutching fingers found no purchase on the slick stone. I smashed up against a rock and bounced sideways, a sob escaping my throat before I managed to suppress it. All I could do was protect my light. It was possible I might survive a broken limb and battered ribs, but if I lost my light, it would be the end of me. I slid faster and faster, the light shining between my feet showed only slick rock and never-ending blackness, and then suddenly, there was nothing beneath me. I was flying out over nothingness. I screamed, my hands flailing to break my fall. The light stick flew out of my grip, and with dull horror, I heard it smash just before I splashed into a shallow pool of water and slime. A vile stench filled my nostrils as I gasped for breath in utter blackness. I was coated in foulness that even my panicked mind recognized as slua shit. And I groaned when my fumbling hands brushed against the skeleton floating in the pool. My aimlessly searching fingers latched hold of something cold and smooth, and I pulled it out of the slime. A heavy metal shape felt familiar in my hands, and my fingers roamed over it. A duck. A golden duck. This was Luke's corpse. I shoved my filthy sleeve into my mouth to muffle the sobs that I could not suppress. There was no way out. A shower of pebbles rained down onto the pool, and my howls cut off abruptly as I held my breath to listen. But nothing stirred. I huddled in terror, in the cold wetness of water and offal, next to Luke's bones. I had no sense of direction, not even of up or down, or the size of the space around me. The darkness was unforgiving, and my frozen body refused to reach out to discover the limits of my circumstances. I was terrified. It was not like the terror of running from a wolf, always knowing you can turn and fight. It was not like the sense of drowning, where there is a chance to flee to the surface. From this darkness and this place, there was no escape. I could neither run nor hide, and no one can fight the dark. All there was left for me to do was die. But the very idea of ending it here, interned in a pool of offal with an idiot like Luke, struck fury in my heart. I wasn't injured or starving. There was hope yet. I began to move, feeling around in the pool in search of Luke's pack. The trolls must have given him a lantern to replace the one I'd lost, and I was certain his pack would contain a flint for lighting it. My fingers brushed against rough fabric, and I hauled it upwards, knowing from the weight that it was the sack containing the rest of his gold. I felt around inside, pulling out smooth coins one after another, until I determined there was nothing of use inside. I started sorting through the gold on the floor, but found nothing but metal and rock belonging to the mountain. No flint. "Where did you put it?" I muttered, forcing myself to concentrate and remember the moment I had seen Luke first light the lantern. I remembered the desperation I'd felt at being deprived of sight, the splatter of water against my face as he'd climbed out of the pool, and the sound of steel striking against flint. And sight. In my mind's eye, I saw the glow of light, and the movement of him tucking the small rock into his coat pocket. Grimly, I waded over towards the corpse, my fingers reaching reluctantly down to touch the bones and half-digested mush of fabric. Then I froze. From out in the blackness, I felt him, like a silken cord strung between two points, one of them drawing even closer. Tristan was coming. Chapter 26. Cecile. I was running out of time. I dug my fingers into the fabric, my heart hammering as the moments ticked by. Tristan was moving many times faster than I had, and I was all but certain he was leading his father's soldiers towards me. My skin brushed against a sharp edge, and I gleefully extracted the knife, sticking it between my teeth for safekeeping. "Flint, Flint, where are you?" I hummed under my breath, trying to combat my panic. He was closer. My fingernails grated across a stone stuck between two ribs, and I quickly pried it out, not allowing my mind to linger on how it became lodged there. Tristan wasn't far now. If I didn't get a source of light soon, he'd catch me. I needed to find the lantern. Wary of the knife's sharp edge, I tentatively struck the two together. Nothing. "Quit being a ninny," I scolded myself and smacked the two firmly together. A spark flew. I repeated the process, but the quick spark wasn't enough to help me locate the lantern. I'd have to do it by feel. Clutching my precious objects, I continued my search. When my hand closed over the slim metal handle of the lantern, I very nearly crowed with delight. But I was too late. I heard the sound of boots, and then light blossomed overhead.
"Cecile."
I froze, the sound of Tristan's voice eliciting an unfortunate mix of emotion in my heart.
"Cecile, where are you?"
My silence was only delaying the inevitable.
"Here."
My tight throat restricted the word to a croak. Coughing, I cleared it and called again. I'm here.
Are you hurt?
I shook my head and then realized he couldn't see me. No.
I'm coming down.
With a recklessness I would never have dared, he scampered down the slick rocks and stopped on a ledge above me. He was alone. Brilliant light filled the chamber, and I looked around and saw in an instant that if my light hadn't broken, my passage out of the slime would have been easy. I stared at the open passage that led to freedom and struggled with my emotions. I should feel disappointment, devastation even. I had been so close. If I'd been better prepared or bolder, I might be breathing open air. But part of me, a part that made me cringe, was glad that he had come. A soft snort of annoyance caught my attention and I looked up. Tristan had his arms crossed and was glaring at me.
Is it because you are a human or because you are a girl?
Is what because? I retorted, infected by his irritation.
Your blasted kaleidoscope of emotion, he snapped. One minute you're happy, the next minute you're sad, then angry, then ashamed. Every hour I'm forced to run the gamut of every emotion that ever existed, and never know the cause of a single one of them.
I crossed my arms and scowled. Tristan threw up his hands in exasperation.
I don't even know whether you want me to rescue you from this mess or leave you here in the dark.
Please, I snapped. You aren't here to rescue me. You're here to stop my escape. And besides, I don't need any help from you.
Oh.
His eyebrows rose along with his anger.
So I take it you are wallowing around in slua shit because you enjoy the smell so much. And you thought it would be more entertaining to navigate the labyrinth in the dark? Perhaps,
he whispered angrily.
We should stuff your ears with wool and tie one arm behind your back to make it truly entertaining for you.
I held up the products of my search triumphantly. See?
Yes, I do see, he snapped. I see a broken lantern that has leaked oil everywhere, and a fool of a girl about to set off sparks in the midst of it.
I looked down, only now seeing the rainbow of oil slicking across the pool of offal. Then I suppose we should both be glad you finally decided to stop me, I said, not bothering to hide the bitterness in my voice. Hurt stung through my mind, and I looked up at him in surprise.
You think I'm here to save my own skin, don't you?
He demanded in a loud whisper. He looked away from me and shook his head. I let the broken lantern slip from my fingers. Why else? I asked.
Duty?
I flung the word at him. His eye snapped back to meet mine.
To hell with duty. I came for you. I came because I was afraid you weren't going to make it. I came because I couldn't stand the thought of something happening to you.
A soft gasp filled my ears, and I dimly realized it had come from my lips. This was not what I had expected, and even though I didn't know entirely why, I knew his statement changed everything. The ropes of power that wrapped around me were blissfully warm as they lifted me out of the slime and settled me on the ledge next to Tristan, holding me steady until I had regained my balance. I looked down at the place where I'd almost met my end. The pool was murky and faintly green, but beneath the floating skeleton and scraps of fabric, there lay a carpet of glittering gold. It's Luke, I gestured below. My purchase price. Tristan scowled.
Then he got what he deserved. The labyrinth always kills the greedy ones eventually.
No one deserves this, I whispered, imagining what it would be like to be paralyzed and have the flesh stripped from your body. A shiver ran down my spine, and I wrapped my sodden cloak around me.
He lied to you. He stole you from your family. He sold you with no more regard than a trader sells a side of beef.
Tristan's hands balled up, and my own teeth clenched from the fury emanating from him.
If any man deserved to die, it was him.
I regarded the bones that had once been Luke, finding it hard to hate a dead man, no matter what he had done. Besides, there was another side to the bargain. And you purchased me, with as much regard as a nobleman buying a side of beef.
I did not.
His silver eyes locked with mine, and I shivered at the intensity in them.
I fought this arrangement at every turn. I've told you that.
He gave you the choice. I was there. My lip trembled. I heard you agree to me with my own ears. But the whole time, you wanted it to be her. Didn't you? Tristan sighed, and the heat left his eyes. He wiped a weary hand across his face and looked down at the glittering pool of gold.
Anais and I are only friends.
Oh, I said, my voice weak.
We have never been anything more, and we never will be,
Tristan continued.
But we pretend we are in order to give me the time and privacy I need to meet with my followers.
Oh, I repeated. I thought that maybe before I came, that you and her... I trailed off as he shook his head. Did you ever consider it? I asked, my mind having a difficult time coming to terms with what he was telling me. Tristan frowned.
Do you really want to go down that path?
No, I said quickly, pressing the heel of my hand to my forehead. Anais is a sympathizer.
Not precisely, Tristan said, but I trust her implicitly. So that isn't so much the issue. Her father, Angoulême, is head of those who wish to keep troll bloodlines pure. He wants to ban all human-troll interactions, ban any human from stepping foot within Trollis, and to conduct all trade at the mouth of the River Road. He also wants to purge the city of anyone with less than pure blood. He's suspected my leanings for a long time, and this isn't the first time he's tried to use Anais against me.
His lips clenched together in a bitter smile, and I could feel his hatred of the Duke sear through my mind. A hatred I was beginning to share.
To make matters worse, he has my younger brother as his ward.
Tristan swallowed hard.
Roland is insane, violently so, and Angoulême has directed his violent predilections toward his cause.
Why did your father let Angoulême have him? I asked, bewildered.
Originally, it was part of a contract that he was negotiating, an alliance, but ultimately I think it was because he didn't want him to turn out like me.
Tristan said quietly.
So he placed him in a home where neither my aunt nor I are welcome.
Anais's home, I said. Tristan nodded.
Which is why I know some of his plans. Angoulême thinks he can control Roland, and that he can get rid of me and put my brother on the throne of Trollis. And if he were to succeed, he, Angoulême, would be king in all but name.
So why don't you tell your father about Angoulême's plot? I demanded. Tristan shook his head.
Because I don't have proof, and neither does he. So we exist in a sort of stalemate, or at least we did,
he added weakly. I felt sick. I played right into his hand, didn't I? If I hated you like I was supposed to, I wouldn't have cared about Anais. I reacted just as he suspected I would. I've put everything at risk. Tristan grimaced.
Yes, but it isn't your fault. It's mine. I should have told you everything when I had the chance. I thought you'd be safer if I kept you in the dark. But I was wrong.
But I hadn't been in the dark.
I had known that Angoulême wanted Tristan dead, and yet still I had let myself believe him. Tristan interrupted my thoughts. It doesn't matter anymore. We are here now, and very near the limits of the rockfall. I'll take you the rest of the way out. He hesitated and then added, if that is what you want. I opened my mouth, planning to say that I would like that very much indeed. But the words wouldn't come out. He was giving me the choice. Here he had the opportunity to be rid of me for good, and he was letting me choose what I wanted to do. Won't you be in a great deal of trouble if you don't bring me back? Very likely. But that's my problem, not yours. The thought of anything happening to him terrified me, and knowing that it would be because of my actions made me ill. If only I'd thought things through, if only I'd trusted him and waited. In less than a year, Tristan would have been king, and I'd be free to go. Of course, he should have trusted me, too.
You must decide, Cecile. My father's soldiers will catch up to us soon enough, and your moment to flee will have passed. After this, another chance will not be forthcoming.
Decide. Decide. I closed my eyes and tried to muster up the courage to lay my cards on the table. I was afraid if I told him how I really felt, that he would laugh at me, that maybe all these apparent confessions were part of a cruel game that I wasn't clever enough to discern. But I couldn't leave without knowing. I couldn't spend the rest of my life with his emotions hovering in the back of my mind without knowing why he was giving me this chance. Always wondering if maybe, just maybe, he had wanted me to stay. I could feel his anticipation thick upon my mind, but that didn't help me know what answer he wanted. What do you want me to do? I asked. He shook his head.
This is your decision.
I know. I dug my fingernails into the rock. But before I make it, I need to know how you feel. About me. His eyes met mine, and I trembled at the intensity of his expression.
Don't you know?
I shook my head. From his pocket, he pulled out a necklace and handed it to me. It was my mother's pendant. You didn't do it. Tristan shook his head.
You asked what was better, closure or hope. And I think hope is better.
His eyes grew distant.
Forcing your family to believe you were dead felt like admitting defeat. Like we were conceding before the battle any hope they might see you again. I just couldn't do it.
I blinked back tears. Are they still looking for me? Or do they think?
Not every day. But as often as they can, they still search the hills. They haven't given up on you.
Thank you, I whispered, lifting the necklace. I watched the pendant turn, reflecting Tristan's light in little sparks. You kept it in your pocket the whole time, then?
My hoarding tendencies manifest themselves in strange ways. It was the only thing that was yours.
He smiled. Not one of his false ones that didn't reach his eyes, but one that lit up my heart.
I noticed you wearing it when you arrived, and again that first night you sang. I watched you standing in the glass gardens, and I thought you were the most beautiful girl I'd ever seen. A flame in the long, dark night.
I'm not, I started to argue, but stopped. Tristan couldn't lie. Reaching up, he fastened the pendant around my neck. The gold was warm.
Most people would have given up a long time ago, just curled up in a corner and waited to die. But you've lived every day. I don't think I've ever met anyone so tenaciously optimistic.
Carefully, as if he feared I might still swat his hand away, he reached out and brushed a slimy lock of hair away from my face.
I want you to stay, Cecile,
but I'm afraid staying will only bring you misery. My knees were trembling so badly that I had to reach out and rest a hand on his shoulder lest I toppled off the edge and ruin the moment. I understood now why trolls bound themselves to each other, despite the risks it carried. To feel so much myself and have him feel the same, it was like drowning, only I had no desire to seek the surface. Tristan's hands circled my waist, and I willingly let him pull me closer, lost in the moment. Then, something over my shoulder caught his attention. I saw his eyes widen in shock just before his light went out. Slua. Tristan jerked me around to the far side of him and pushed me backwards along the ledge, but it was too late. Something slammed into him and he fell backwards, knocking both of us off the ledge and into the pool below. The impact of hitting the slime knocked the wind out of me with a wicked slap that made every inch of me scream in pain. Out of the range of the creature's ability to nullify magic, Tristan's light flickered back into existence long enough for me to see the white bulk of the slua squeeze out from behind a rock and slide down the incline towards us.
Baroom! Cecile!
Tristan dragged me backwards, but Luke's skeleton tangled in my skirts, holding me in place. The light went out, and the soft bulk of the creature collided with me, driving me beneath the surface of the pool. Sharp pieces of gold dug into my back, and the slimy body of the slua pressed against my face, holding me down. I pummeled my fists against it, but they sunk deep into the monster's soft form with little effect. My lungs burned, and panic flooded my veins. Snatching up a piece of bone, I jammed it into the creature's soft hide. The slua shrieked and squirmed its bulk off me. Grasping hands caught hold of my cloak, helping me struggle upwards and pulling me back as I gasped in breaths of precious air. Tristan's light flickered faintly, growing in strength as we struggled out of the slua's range. I kept my eyes fixed on it, watching it squirm its way into a rocky perch where it sat, whip-like tongue flickering in and out. It had no more eyes or face than a garden slug, but I swore it watched us with the amused expression of a cat watching a mouse.
Hurry, Cecile!
Tristan had me by the hand and was dragging me through the tunnels, but I kept my head turned back, watching the slua as we rounded a corner. Why isn't it attacking? What's it waiting for?
For me to die.
My head snapped back around, and only then did I see the blood running down his hand, dripping into the ground.
No,
I whispered, and every inch of me grew cold as I remembered Elise's words.
Their venom is deadly, even to one of us. You can't die.
It can't be helped, he said. There is nothing that can be done.
I could see the tightness in his face, feel the fear and anguish in his heart. But I knew he'd never admit any of it. Anger at his fatalism drove away my terror. Trolls did little to help their injured, leaving it up to fate to determine whether the victim lived or died. But I wasn't a troll. I'd seen village wise women pull men back from the brink of death with herb lore. More importantly, I'd seen my father save one of our neighbors from a viper bite that would surely have killed him untreated.
Stop,
I said, pulling Tristan to a halt.
Have you lost your mind? Tristan hissed.
I pulled up his sleeve, exposing the puncture wound. It was small, but already the skin around it was inflamed. Tearing a strip of fabric from my cloak, I tightly bound his arm beneath his elbow.
It's just like a snake bite, I whispered. Just like a snake bite.
Taking a deep breath, I raised his arm to my mouth and sucked on it hard like I'd seen my father do. The faintly metallic taste of blood filled my mouth, but it was foul with the bitterness of poison. Tristan jerked his arm away, horror on his face.
Do you want to die too?
I spat the noxious mixture onto the ground and gripped his arm again.
This is how it's done. It's just like a snake bite.
I repeated the process until all I could taste was blood.
but still the inflammation grew. Knife, I ordered. He pulled one from his boot and handed it to me. This will hurt, I warned, and then made a series of cuts around the wound and left it to bleed freely. Tristan didn't flinch, but I could feel that he was in more pain than the knife cuts warranted. You need to stay still now, I said. Wait for them to find us. On the tail of my words came the soft swish-swish from the tunnel behind us. The Slua was on the move, tracking its injured prey.
I don't think that's advisable, Tristan said, and he pressed the palm of his hand against his forehead.
I felt his dizziness and pain like it was my own, and rested a hand against the wet rock to keep my balance. Perhaps not.
We need to move, Tristan responded, refusing to look at me. There isn't much time.
It did not take long for me to discover how Tristan had moved with such speed through the labyrinth. Magic flooded out ahead of us as we ran, making the uneven tunnel smooth as a marble corridor and springy as a grassy meadow. Where I had had to climb up and down piled boulders, he created glowing platforms that bridged the gaps. Even the spots where I had to drop to my hands and knees were made easier by the free-flowing orbs that lit our path. He did not pause or even glance at the path markers. His knowledge of these tunnels ingrained through years of exploration, or perhaps by some knowledge innate to his kind. But Tristan was right. We did not have much time. The venom was in his blood, coursing through his veins, and slowly but surely, numbing his senses. He stumbled with greater frequency, and his breath came in great, heavy gasps, whereas I was barely wounded. And I could feel the haze in his mind, the growing confusion. He slowed to a walk, which quickly became a stagger. Then, to my horror, he fell to his knees. Tristan! I swung his uninjured arm around my shoulder and tried to pull him to his feet, but he pushed me aside. His normally hot skin was cold and clammy to the touch, and his hand trembled in mine.
Here.
He beckoned to the orb of light, and it floated close to us.
Take it,
he said. I can't, I said. But at the sight of his pained expression, I reached out and sunk my fingers into the warm power. To my amazement, it didn't flow away as it usually did, but maintained its form and followed my hand.
Take it and go,
he whispered, slumping against me. I eased him down so that he lay with his head on my lap. I'm not leaving you to be eaten by a giant slug, I said, hoping the false confidence in my voice would overpower the fear he must have known I felt.
You have to go. The Slua will not stop until it finds us.
Let it come.
Cecile.
I could hear the frustration in his voice, weak as it was.
There's no sense in you staying. No one survives a Slua sting for long. I'm going to die. You need to get out of the labyrinth, past the barrier of the curse, and as far away as you can. The distance will make it hurt less for you when my light goes out.
A sob tore its way out of my throat. Mark will find us before the Slua.
Even worse.
Tristan's voice was barely audible now.
You will serve no purpose with me gone. My father will have you killed, and he won't be as quick about it as the Slua.
He groaned in pain, and a tear rolled down my filthy cheek.
Take the light, and try to get out while you still can.
I'm not leaving you for that thing to eat while you're still alive, I whispered. If it costs me my life, then so be it.
Stubborn until the end, he sighed softly. Stay until I'm dead then. But promise me, when it's over, you'll find a way out. Promise me, you'll live.
Feeling his panic and fear was hard enough, but seeing it written in hard lines across his face was even worse.
His militant self-control was slipping, and I could see the true magnitude of his terror. And still, he was thinking of me.
No, I said. I won't promise anything, because that would mean giving up. You won't die. You won't die.
For a moment, Tristan's fear turned to anger.
This wasn't how it was supposed to go.
Then don't let it end this way.
Never before had I felt such a pure sense of helplessness. Why couldn't I have the power to help him, to make Tristan well again?
Cecile.
He writhed in pain, his grip grinding the bones in my hand together. I closed my eyes, and images of the Slua assaulted me. I would be powerless to stop it. It would sting me, and then turn on Tristan. My mind recoiled at the thought of me lying there, paralyzed by venom, but still conscious enough to watch the monster strip the flesh from his face.
No,
I whispered.
I won't let it happen.
Pushing up his sleeve, I examined the cuts I had made. Not only had they not healed over with the preternatural speed at which trolls usually healed, they were bleeding profusely. I pressed my hand against them, trying to slow the flow, but crimson liquid seeped through my fingers and coated my hands.
Troll blood. Blood magic.
Hands shaking, I tried to remember Anushka's incantations, muttering the half-remembered phrases, but nothing happened.
Please work.
Desperately, I called upon every ounce of will I had and used it to pull the foreign power filling the blood seeping from his veins.
Live, 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 I chanted.
A wind rose, whistling through the tunnels. Every sound grew sharper, and everything near me clearer to the eye.
Stop bleeding,
I shouted, and beneath my hands, I watched in amazement as Tristan's wounds ceased to bleed and sealed over, leaving pale white scars in their place. My breath caught.
Tristan?
His eyes remained closed. The seething pulse of his pain and delirium remained. The healed wounds were meaningless. I had done nothing to stop the progress of the venom. Desperately, I pulled power from all around me, from the rocks beneath my knees, the stagnant air in my lungs, and the water dripping down onto my face. I felt full, flush, but it was all for naught, because the power refused to acknowledge Tristan. He did not belong to this world. A racking sob tore through me. For a moment, it had seemed I had all the power in the world at my fingertips. But I could not help him, so it meant nothing. I was powerless. Gently, I rested the ball of light on his chest, hopeful that the magic would warm him, as it did me. I saw it then. Like blight on a grapevine, the silver leaves tattooed across my fingers were tarnished at their edges. Tristan was dying. Chapter 27. Cecile. My tears dripped onto Tristan's face, and I wiped them away, exposing streaks of pale skin through the grime. I'd never touched him. Not really. And now I realized that I might never have another chance. With one finger, I gently traced the solid line of his jaw, the slight dimple in his chin. His hair was soaked and plastered against his forehead, and I pushed it back. The strands, like fine silk. He looked younger. His dark brows relaxed from their usual furrow of concentration, and his black lashes resting softly against his cheeks. And on my fingers, the silver vines grew progressively darker with every passing moment.
I'm sorry, I whispered.
But what good were my regrets? He was dying because of me. He had ventured into the labyrinth to save me.
pulled me out of the way of the Slua's stinger and taken the blow himself. The anguish of regret was so strong, I very nearly groaned with the pain of it. Why had I let Angoulême goad me? Why hadn't I seen that Tristan was just putting on an act the way he always did? Why didn't I remember that I would have felt any indiscretion through our connection? He hadn't asked for this union any more than I had, and still, he'd placed my life above everything he'd worked for. I'd ruined everything, and still he'd come for me when I'd needed him the most. I'd told myself to make the most of my life in Trollis, but instead, I'd made the least of it. The worst of it. Because of me, the only other person fighting for my freedom was dying.
Barum!
I shuddered at the noise, but the sound of the Slua approaching filled me with resolve. Tristan's life might be fading away, but he would have no chance at all if he ended up in the Slua's belly. I was all that stood between him and the worst of deaths, and I needed to think of a plan fast. Carrying him was out of the question. He was nearly twice my size, and even if I could lift him, there was no way I could outpace the monster. Gently easing Tristan's head down onto the stone, I pulled the knife out of his boot and examined it. If only he'd had his sword, or better yet, one of the long Slua spears. If I'd had any skill at it, I might hit the Slua's little brain with a lucky shot. With a bow and arrow, I certainly could have managed it. But such speculation did me about as much good as spitting into a headwind. I got to my feet and set about exploring my surroundings, Tristan's light clinging to my fingers. I couldn't kill the Slua or drive it off, but maybe I could hide from it long enough for Mark to find us. Careful not to wander too far from Tristan, I searched through the fallen rocks. I quickly found what I was looking for. A tight sliver of space opening into a small chamber beyond. It was a dead end. The Slua wouldn't be able to sneak around behind me, but it also meant I would be trapped until the trolls found us. If they found us. Running back to Tristan, I bent down to check his breathing. I was still flooded with the feel of him, but it made me feel better to check. His chest rose and fell, and I could feel a faint pulse at his throat.
Please don't go,
I whispered to the light as I let go of it. Hooking my arms under his, I slowly dragged him in the direction of our hidey hole. The light trailed after us.
Boom!
It was closer now. Close enough that I could hear the swish-swish of its body sliding over the rocks. I had to hurry, but Tristan was both heavy and unwieldy. Swish, swish. Sweat dribbled down my back to join the filth soaking my dress. My heart hammered from terror and exertion, and with a final heave, I reached the mouth of the hole. Come on, Cécile, I urged myself on. Swish, swish. My narrow shoulders fit easily enough, but Tristan stuck, and every muscle in my body screamed with the effort of turning him sideways and pulling him through.
Boom!
It was nearly upon us. I pulled hard, and we tumbled into the little chamber. I hurriedly dragged him to the far end and covered him with my cloak. Falling to my knees, I tucked the wet fabric around him and gently kissed his forehead. His breathing was ragged, and though my own life was very much in jeopardy, my fear was for him. Please don't die, I whispered. Don't leave me now, Tristan. Please, if you can hear me at all, fight this. Don't let this be the end. I pressed my mouth to his, feeling the softness of his lips beneath mine.
I love you, I whispered. I know I shouldn't. I know I'm not supposed to, but I can't seem to help myself.
Barum!
The Slua slammed up against the mouth of the hole, and I screamed, my voice echoing against the rock. Spinning around,
I watched in terror as the creature's long stinger lashed into the chamber. It fell only an arm's length short, but I kept myself between the stinger and Tristan, for all the good I'd do. The stinger whipped out again and again, always falling just short. The Slua shrieked in fury, and I screamed back at it, angry and afraid.
"Go away!" I shouted. "Get you gone, you filthy bugger!"
Picking up a loose rock, I hurled it out through the crack and was rewarded with a wet thud. I threw another rock and another, and when there were none left at hand, I screamed every insulting curse word I had ever heard at the creature. It tossed its bulk against the rocks and shot out its stinger, but it could not reach us. My supply of rocks and insults exhausted, I bent down to check on Tristan and noticed the fine layer of dust and bits of rock coating him and me both. I looked up nervously and watched a cloud of dust rain down every time the Slua slammed against the rock. They were mindless creatures. Bent on the sole purpose of catching its prey, it might pull the rocks down upon us all. Then, over the racket the Slua was making, I heard a voice.
"Tristan! Cecile!"
It was Mark.
"Here!" I screamed. "We're in here!"
"We found them! Over here!"
It was the sound of many voices, and I breathed a sigh of relief. We were saved. The Slua retreated from the entrance at the sound of the approaching trolls, but there was no chance for it to escape. The sound of its dying screams were deafening as dozens of long steel spears pierced its body. On hands and knees, I watched it collapse into a writhing heap before growing still. Mark's face appeared in the entrance to our hiding spot.
"Cecile?"
"Mark,"
I croaked, my voice hoarse from yelling.
"Tristan's hurt."
His eyes flickered past me to Tristan's still form, and his face paled. Pushing his way in, Mark knelt next to the prince.
"What happened?"
"The Slua stunned him. We were running from it, and then he..."
A sob choked off the rest of my words. Mark leaned his head against the wall, and I could see the sorrow written across his fractured face.
"Then he's dead."
"He isn't!"
Angry eyes turned on me.
"He will be soon enough. No one survives Slua venom."
I cupped Tristan's cheek and felt a whisper of breath against my hand.
"You don't know that."
Mark grasped my arm and shoved me back.
"He's dying because of you."
There was murder in his eyes, and I shrank away from the closest thing I'd had to a friend in Trollis.
"This is your fault, Cecile,"
he hissed.
"He would have done anything for you, and this is how you repay him?"
Power shoved me backwards like two hands pushing against my chest.
"Get away from him."
"You have no right to keep me from him," I said.
Immediately I knew I'd gone too far. Power pushed me out of the hole, and I tripped, landing half on the body of the Slua. Mark came after me, and I scrambled to my feet. He raised a hand to hit me, and I ducked my head under my arm and waited for the blow. It never came. I looked up and saw Mark standing frozen, his face twisted in fury.
"I promised never to harm you,"
he choked out. His eyes flicked to Vincent.
"But you didn't."
The big troll shook his head sadly.
"If he lives, he won't forgive us for hurting her,"
he said.
"And frankly, I couldn't forgive myself."
Then he looked at me.
"If he dies, her head won't stay on her shoulders for long."
"Take her back to Trollis,"
Mark snapped. He and several of the other trolls slid into the small chamber, and moments later they emerged with Tristan's limp form. Mark looked over at Vincent.
"Mind she doesn't stab you in the back on the way."
I flinched, but said nothing. I had dropped Tristan's ball of light when Mark pushed me,
but it floated in my direction now. Grabbing hold of the magic, I held it up to my other hand and examined my tattoo. It was a dull gray now, but not black like those on Mark's hand. I could feel Tristan faintly, almost like when he was sleeping. He was still alive. I saw Vincent looking at my marks as well. "He won't die," I said. Vincent nodded slowly.
"For your sake, for all our sakes, I hope that's so."
Then, with his iron fist locked around my arm, we made our way back to Trollis. He left me alone with Zoe and Elise in the chambers where they had once prepared me for bonding. Neither spoke to me, but I could feel their anger and sorrow thick in the air. It suited my mood well. It took 3 tubs full of bathwater to get the slua stench off me, and I think they did it not for my comfort but for their own. As they scrubbed my skin raw, I watched the gray marks on my hand grow darker, less metallic, and the feeling of Tristan in my mind grew fainter by the minute. Tears drizzled out of my eyes, but the girls wiped them away as though they were mere condensation from the bath. I made no comment when they twisted my hair back into a severe knot, or when they brought in a black silk morning gown and laced the corset so tight I could barely breathe. They were acting like he was dead already, when I knew he wasn't. When they'd finished with me, I stood in front of the mirror. The woman looking back at me appeared haggard, a decade older than I was. Her blue eyes were dull and swollen red from tears, and the corners of her mouth turned down. I turned away from my reflection and resumed my vigil, eyes fixed on my hand.
"You were supposed to be our salvation," Elise said. "We did everything we could to help you, and this is how you repay us? By trying to escape?"
I remained silent, refusing to look at her. There was nothing I could say.
"I can't decide if you're happy or sad that he's dead,"
Zoe said, and something inside me snapped.
"He's not dead,"
I screamed, my hands balled into fists.
"He's not dead,"
I repeated. Turning away from her, I fell to my knees and sobbed silently. I was still on the floor when the guards came, and their rough hands lifted me and dragged my uncooperative form through the palace and into the open air. I looked up only when I felt the mist from the river hit my face, and saw thousands of trolls standing all around, their eyes fixed on me. It was eerily similar to my wedding day, except this time I stood alone. And in place of an altar, there stood a guillotine. Tristan's father walked away from the cluster of noblemen, managing to carry himself in a stately manner despite his bulk. His eyes were puffy and red, but when he stopped in front of me, I saw that his cheeks were dry. He cleared his throat.
"There is nothing to say other than I would kill you 1,000 times for what you have done, were it possible."
I said nothing.
"Because of you,"
the king continued,
"we've ruled Trollis for nearly 1,400 years, and it is finished because of you."
Anger rose up inside me. He cared nothing for Tristan, his son, only for Tristan the heir. His dismay was not for the loss of his child, but for the loss of power and glory. I rose up to my full height and glared at the king. "If that's all you care about, then it's a good thing you have 2 heirs.
"Roland isn't Tristan,"
the king screamed at me.
"Kill her,"
someone from the crowd shouted.
"She's a traitor."
It was the half-bloods who screamed this, accusing me of not treason against the king and crown, but against their leader and their cause.
"I'm sorry," I pleaded,
I didn't mean for this to happen.
A grime-coated miner spat in my direction.
Liar, he screamed. Traitor, you killed him.
My cheeks burned with fury.
Tristan isn't dead.
The word froze on my lips as a searing pain tore through